This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Grace Potter. You know how to make me weak in the knees when you pour yourself all over me.
There's somebody talking back in the day. Now you never ever love, no, you only want to play. I cry when you do, I cry when you go. Why won't you tell me what you want with me? One day we're together, then we're apart. Why won't you let me fill up your empty heart? Well, there's a big old hole in the middle of you, 'cause somebody left you black and blue.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome back, in a way, Grace Potter to the show. How are you doing?
Hello. It's good to be back, even though I was never here to begin with.
Right. As we were talking about before the interview started, real quickly, I'll tell listeners, we started an interview about 8 years ago at the Targhee Festival in Wyoming, and the gear that I had malfunctioned, and the it was a great interview that we were having.
Yeah, and in that really nice hotel room with the fireplace. I remember that.
And it was lost to the ethers as an update needed to be done to that machine. But anyway, we've got a new machine and a new interview.
I have a feeling that technology's on our side this time around. You know,
I mean, we're both looking at a WAV file as we're doing this.
Men have made great strides since then in computer technology, so I think we're going to be okay.
So true, so true. We're going to be talking about the new project, Midnight. And we want to tell folks, too, we're doing this interview in mid-February 2016 from backstage at the Wilma Theater in Missoula.
That's right. And if any noise starts kicking in, it's Eliza Party Jones upstairs sound checking, my opener, who's also my bandmate.
And I wondered, because I know you're from Vermont originally, if you kind of felt at home in Montana.
Totally. Yeah. Totally at home here. It's so funny. I've talked a lot about, I mean, we are the two states with the word Mont in them, right? So we have that going for us. But also, I really, anytime I'm in a place that's either a ski town or a coastal town that relies on tourism, but it isn't really changing who they are inherently to cater to tourists, I feel that there's an identity that is created there. It's kind of a fierce sense of independence, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs, there's a lot of people who find these little pockets of the world where they're able to be themselves, and people come because of that. It's the culture of the town that is more attractive than necessarily the ski slope or the surf or the river or whatever it is. And I think growing up in the Mad River Valley in the Northeast, I had that experience because the town itself had just as much character as the ski mountains that I skied on. And I can feel that out here for sure.
And then we also have, of course, the love of craft beer.
Oh my God. There's so many microbreweries. It's like, I feel like now there's all these little mini Napa valleys, you know, that you can tour through in Oregon and Washington and Montana. And then obviously the Northeast is, yeah, is crazy with the microbreweries right now. It's just insane.
Well, let's talk about Midnight. And I confess, I didn't realize until I really started researching this that this was really your first quote unquote solo recording.
Right. I didn't mean to do a solo record. And that's the truth. I set out for this to be a Grace Potter and the Nocturnals record. We were just, you know, in our record cycle, it was sort of The Lion, the Beast, the Beat. Our last record was done, and I started writing for this one. And I knew right away from beginning the writing process that there was something different happening here. And I think it was ultimately my desire for to not just join the conversation in pop music, but to sort of be more of a global voice, find a way to be more universal. I don't think that there's a lot of musicians that have the ability and the opportunity to get as far as I've gotten. I know that, I mean, most of my friends are musicians out there just trying to crank away at it and make something happen, anything. I've had so much luck. And I just felt that I was being a little insular and a little bit insulated in the way that I was making music. And it wasn't really for me. It was more to keep everybody comfortable. Mm. And in the process of making the record, I've always been somebody who really wants to make my band and the people that are touring with me feel loved, like they matter, valued, and also just to show everybody how much I appreciate their talent, because I really believe that the collective is more powerful than the single voice. This was an odd experience, because suddenly I was a single voice making every sound in all the demos, and it was a complete thought. So when I brought it to my record company and to the producer who ultimately ended up making the record with me, they heard what they liked and they knew that there was something really cool happening. And then I sent it to the band and it was radio silence.
Really?
For like 3 weeks. It was a really scary moment, because every time I write music for the band, it usually just permeates into everybody's bones and everybody starts playing their parts and we go out on the road and we mess around a little more at sound check or whatever, and then the songs become what they are. But this was just, these thoughts were completed. And I was always sort of fiercely loyal and kind of intense about the whole band thing. Like, you know, when we'd have magazine cover shoots and the band wasn't allowed to be on the cover, they just wanted my face, I would get really bummed out and I'd kind of kick up a fuss. And or I would wear a t-shirt that says, "Why isn't my band on the cover?" You know, in the photo shoot. And I just, I really was kind of a Viking in that way. And I was very fiercely protective over my bandmates. So it was weird when they didn't like the music. But instead of getting angry about it, I just had to have that revelatory moment of like, okay, maybe this just is fundamentally a different thing. Mm. You know, maybe this is not what that is, and maybe that's okay.
Always told us we would be.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by Grace Potter. And in the background, you might hear a little bit of the sound check. Again, doing research and looking through some of the videos, I was obviously familiar with your work, came across this video of you, which I did not know existed, of you singing Gimme Shelter with the Rolling Stones.
No big deal. Well, hanging out with Jagger.
Well, here's the thing that struck me, you know, and we've been talking about, you know, your qualities as a musician, and beyond that, obviously you're well known, very well known for your live performances and the energy you have as an entertainer and as a front person, mm-hmm. which, you know, you have to be a great musician. You may not have that. You know, a lot of great musicians don't necessarily have that kind of energy. Yeah. And I'm watching this video, and after a while, it was almost like, wait, who's that guy singing with Grace Potter? Because,
well,
I mean,
that's just not true. There's no way that Mick Jagger could be outshined.
But here's the thing. I mean, you walked out there, and not only are you holding your own musically, which you very much did, but the energy was remarkable. And so my question is, I guess, at what point did you know, I can hold an audience's attention, whether it's, where'd you say this was?
That's a really good question, actually. So that was in Minneapolis, the Rolling Stones show. We did multiple shows with the Stones, but that was that night. It was the only night. Like, I was wearing a silver dress that I had gotten at a casino in Vegas. Like, I was very excited about just getting up there and just kind of doing my thing. And then it turned out, I turned around and there's Mick Jagger and his wardrobe woman, who unbeknownst to me had his whole, you know, wardrobe set out for him, had him in a matching jacket to me, like matching silver leather jacket.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And it was not planned. It was the cosmos just pulling us together in this perfect harmony. And it was, you know, it's just one of those moments that you realize, like, I can quit now if I wanted to. I could check off that bucket list. That was the last box on my bucket list, and I did it. But to answer your question about the first time I felt that command over the audience, I think it was really early on. Maybe when I was 17 or 18 years old, I think, was when I realized that you can make a connection with the audience and it goes beyond the content of what's coming out of your mouth or what you're playing on the guitar, or what you're playing on the piano. Or if, you know, for example, when I was 17, I was the lead in a musical. And it wasn't really the lines, getting the lines right, that was the important thing. There's an energy and a compulsion that goes with enjoying the spotlight, and you either do or you don't. And then you're either convincing or you're not. And that's really the difference, is that if you're not telling the truth, if you're not being true in your music, then it comes off as a little bit of a blank canvas for people. They just see a pretty white girl with blonde hair and, you know, high cheekbones, which is, you know, unfortunately been the sidetrack and the odd thing that has sort of gotten in my way. I hate to say that, because I don't think being pretty is a problem. I've never made a point to, you know, talk about this a lot, but I've had experiences where really people are like, if she just wasn't as pretty, you know, maybe we'd take her seriously.
Oh,
you know, and I think that happens a lot. I'm guilty of it too, though. I mean, I'm guilty of it with actresses and musicians and men and women. I've seen very pretty boy men where I just don't really care what they're saying. They're just too pretty. That's distracting, you know? And I think that's probably why Janis Joplin had such a success, is that she walked that line perfectly. She was beautiful, she was goddess-like, but there was something about her that was completely approachable and not otherworldly, you know? But I'm more of a Bowie fan, you know? I didn't really listen to Janis Joplin when I was growing up. I was into Bowie. I was into the alien, otherworldly glamour of the show. I love the performance. I love makeup and fashion, and, you know, I believe in dance moves, and I believe in the show. I really think that being compelling has a lot to do with just balance. And, you know, David Bowie and Mick Jagger and maybe Robert Plant are the three men or humans I've ever seen who can have struck that balance perfectly between sexuality, artistry, fashion, art, risk, and just humanity, just being human.
The day you asked me for my name.
Grace, you've kind of referenced this quote that I wanted to reference to you a couple times, but I think there's still some things that I can pull out of it. I figured out something, and I should give credit to the Boise Weekly is where I found this. I figured out something about myself, and I just love this. I'm just way, way, way stronger than I thought I was, and way more tuned into what the truth is. Yeah. And you've kind of alluded to some of that, but I think the strength part of it is interesting to me, because I certainly would think anyone who had seen you perform, certainly, would say, holy man, that's a strong woman, you know?
Yeah, but there's one thing to look strong. It's one thing to look strong and like act like a badass. And I think there's another thing to actually be a badass. And Beyonce has said it well when she talks about having Sasha Fierce. It's a character. Being a badass can be a character, you know? But vulnerability and revealing some of your misgivings and some of the mistakes you've made and some of the bruises that you've, you know, accrued along the way, I think is a far more compelling thing for the audience. And I mean, I'm a mess right now. I'm in a good way, but I think it's all really like, I've completely pulled my life apart, you know? I mean, the band, the Nocturnals, wasn't just my band. It was my husband and my everything, you know? I mean, it was like, I was married to all five of those guys. And, so to be on the road, and especially now, you know, looking at it maybe 6 months or 8 months later, I'm realizing how much I've not just kicked up the dust, but I've kind of like overturned everything and torn it apart. Because, and it's not necessarily self-sabotage if you're looking for the answers, and that's really what I'm doing.
I'm struck by the similarities to what you're saying to, I think it's a Japanese saying of, now that the roof of my house is gone, I have a much better vision of the stars. I'm paraphrasing that, or something
beautiful.
Like that.
God, that, see, now I became obsessed with James Turrell, who likes roofless houses. This is an artist, Southern California artist, who's really very much into astronomy, and that became a focus of mine. And I carry my compass with me, and I carry a telescope wherever we go. So I do spend a lot of time looking up now. And it's given me some perspective, but at the same time, I'm no astronaut. I'm not going to be going to astronaut camp anytime soon. Listen, I'm very happy with my feet on the ground. I just think, you know, yeah, sometimes it's got to get messy before you can really understand that life is not clean, you know?
You got a hunger for my heart. breaking so much. I'm breaking down. So go on, keep taking more till everything is gone. You're breaking me down. You're breaking me down. You're breaking me down.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and we're speaking today with Grace Potter. I have to ask this question because it's not often that when I speak to a publicist about an upcoming interview, they say, make sure to ask her about NASA. So we have to make have to go back to, you've made some astronaut and space travel analogies.
That's
so,
right.
So what's going on with NASA here?
It doesn't
involve astronaut camp,
it
right?
It doesn't, there's nothing I want less than to be shot up into outer space in a tin can. However, the human experience on Earth is what we have right now. It's our reality. But it's been decades and decades and decades that people have been, almost 100 years now, that people have been really serious about what happens next and when this planet runs out of resources or when this planet gets hit by, the Kuiper Belt decides that it's going to become a huge, whatever.
You just dropped Kuiper Belt in the middle of the interview is pretty cool.
I am a nerd. I am a major nerd. In fact, I have a separate Instagram that's just for my nerdiness. It's called Space Potter, not Grace Potter. And I'm very serious about it. I think that I was obsessed with Earth space science as a kid, and then I kind of lost track of it when I got into music. So, in my own little kitschy way, I always have a mug from NASA on stage. And we did a music video for the single that came out from Midnight called Empty Heart, and I had the mug in the video. And apparently, one of the engineers from NASA, the guys who like build their spaceships, saw the NASA mug and was like, "That's interesting. I'm a Grace Potter fan. I'm going to call up her people and see if she might be interested in coming and visiting NASA." And this all came as a massive shock to me because I've just, I follow and study. And, when this whole Mars, water on Mars thing happened, I was like, this has been going on for years, people. Come on. I am such a big nerd that I wanted to acknowledge the amount of... The lack of qualifications I have for getting a phone call from NASA. No one from NASA should be ever calling me. It's just absurd. But it did happen, and I did turn it into an opportunity and invited the band and the crew. So we had a 20-person crew that took a tour, and it was just a week ago. Wow. We were just there at Johnson Space Center, and we had an amazing time. We saw Mission Control. And we actually, if you go to my Instagram, you can see there's a moment where we go to the old Apollo 13 Mission Control, and we're all hiding behind the Mission Control counters, and we jump up, and I put a David Bowie song, Ziggy Stardust, in, and you can see us all jumping up. We did the wave. It was really exciting. So,
GracePotter.com is the name of the website. Midnight is the name of her most recent recording. It's been a pleasure talking shop with you here on Musician Spotlight.
And the mic worked this time.
I was say, this one will air, I think. So thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. This was so fun.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Grace Potter. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the Wilma Theater for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.